Macmillan Audio presents The Husband List by Janet Ivanovich and Dorian Kelly. Read for you by Lorelei King.
Chapter 1. Close your eyes and think of chocolate cake, Caroline Maxwell told herself. It was the only way she could get through this tedious dress fitting. Even in the advanced year of 1894, an American heiress had certain rules to follow, and allowing herself to be a pincushion for the House of Worth seemed to be one of them. What Caroline really wanted was adventure, independence, and to see the world, but she doubted her parents would ever come to their senses enough to set her free. The seamstress who accompanied Caroline's new wardrobe from Worth's Paris dress shop across the Atlantic to the Maxwell family's Fifth Avenue residence wielded another pin. Caroline winced in anticipation. The angry-looking woman had already caught skin twice. Maybe her aim was off due to the lingering seasickness that delayed yesterday's fitting. Or perhaps she was intimidated by the dozens of china figurines Mama had positioned about Caroline's enormous sitting room. The sense that one was being watched by countless beady little eyes could be unsettling, not to mention the house itself. With 60 rooms, it too could rattle a soul. "Your measurements have changed," the Frenchwoman accused. And then there was that. "Impossible," Caroline fibbed. She glanced at her mother, who kept an eye on affairs from her regal perch atop the massive red velvet and gold gilt settee that she'd also insisted must be part of Caroline's quarters. Normally, her mother wouldn't tolerate such talk from a servant, but Agnes was secretly intimidated by the French, which was why they'd left Paris before the dresses were done. Mama brushed away an imaginary crumb from the fabric of her conservative, high-necked, dove-gray morning dress, and then fussed with a tiny bit of lace at each cuff. Caroline knew she was on her own in the battle of the pins. The seamstress stepped back on the thick carpet to assess her work. Caroline caught her own reflection in the cheval mirror that was positioned so that Mama could see Caroline in profile. Mr. Worth's style sense was clearly incomparable. The low-cut, almost risqué, ivory silk ball gown Caroline wore had been embellished with what felt like pounds of pearls and dark green crystals. Assuming she could bear up under the weight, it would complement her clear complexion and hair as dark as her mother's. Rumor had it that Mama's maternal great-grandmother had been a Cherokee princess, which Mama would not confirm. Worth's skills had also made Caroline's slight surplus of curves an asset rather than a detriment. Come the season, she was doomed. She had no idea what she could do to top last year's anti-marriage efforts. All the same, she intended to escape this year's marriage market as she had 1893's, unwed, unpromised, and as independent as she could be, which, in her opinion, was not saying much. Caroline released her breath and unclenched clammy palms as another pin met only fabric. And in other sunny news, her mother's insecurity meant that at least Caroline would not be facing French dukes on top of the English dukes Mama kept pushing her to marry.
"Absolument, you have gained since your last fitting," the seamstress said, "and more than a little."
Caroline answered with a vague smile. It would never do to confess that she'd begun midnight kitchen forays to ease her tight nerves.
"Caroline, have you varied from our agreed-upon menu?" her mother asked.
Alarm had made her dark brows arch closer to her perfectly coiffed hair with its beginning threads of silver. There had been no agreement. There hadn't even been negotiations, just no outright objection from Caroline. She'd decided long ago that working around her mother was more diplomatic than upsetting her. Easier, too. And since her mother's eating edict had made Caroline 50% a spectator at family meals, she felt she deserved a fat slice of chocolate cake whenever she wished. It wasn't noon yet, and her mouth watered at the thought of tonight's pilfered treat.
Actually, not so very pilfered, since Cook had caught on to the scheme and now left Cake waiting for her. Mama pursed her lips and scrutinized Caroline more closely.
You must have been straying. You're looking plumper in the face when Amelia and Helen are still as slim as can be.
At 16, her twin sisters didn't yet have the avoidance skills Caroline possessed at 21, or the same ability to hold their tongues under their mother's inquisition techniques. They always confessed. Caroline kept her silence. Mama narrowed her eyes. Caroline widened hers. Mama cleared her throat, giving warning of a lecture to come. Caroline did her best to exude an aura of innocence as strong as her mother's favored gardenia perfume. It must have worked, because Mama heaved a resigned sigh.
"Stand taller," she ordered, "shoulders back and chin up."
Caroline complied, though the gown would be no looser around her waist for the effort. Tonight's cake would have to be her last for a while. It wasn't as though she could eat her way to freedom. American heiresses were as popular with unmarried and underfunded English noblemen as chocolate cake was with Caroline.
"If you are to wear a coronet, you must look as though you were born to it," Mama said. That and, "You are this family's crown jewel," were two of her mother's favorite things to say.
Caroline found both statements as uncomfortable as the corset currently mashing her innards. Mama had been about to issue another proclamation, probably about crown jewels, but was distracted by a one-person stampede down the mahogany parquet hallway. Annie, Caroline's new personal maid, appeared. Breathless, she took an instant to compose herself. It was hopeless. During her dash, her red curls had sprung free from their tight bun and were now nearly at right angles from the white cap atop her head.
"Mrs. Maxwell, ma'am, O'Brien has asked me to tell you that Mrs. Longhorn is calling," Annie said.
She thrust out a calling card. She did not, however, have the silver tray that the butler used, so Caroline's mother pretended not to see it. Annie waited for a response, then plowed on, either unaware or uncaring of her breach of decorum.
"Ma'am, she's on her way up here now."
"Really? Here?" Agnes asked, rising.
Annie was saved. Mrs. Longhorn venturing to private quarters without invitation was an even greater violation of Mama's rules than Annie's slip-up. Mildred Longhorn rushed in, her hands fluttering on either side of her face like two of the finches that Mama kept caged in the conservatory. Her pointy nose was red at the tip, and her usually nondescript gray eyes sparkled with excitement. She hadn't even changed out of the black riding habit she wore for a morning turn about the park, and the knot of early June pansies at one buttonhole looked ready to jump ship.
"Agnes, I have the most exciting news! Lord Bremerton is visiting with friends at Newport this season!"
Caroline's mother gasped.
"Bremerton, the son of Viscount Bellingham, grandson of the Duke of Ensley?"
"Yes!"
"He's married," Mama said in a dismissive tone.
While Caroline was hardly in love with her mother's determination to marry her into English nobility, she had to give her credit for an impressive level of study.
"No, no, not that one. He's dead. There's a new Bremerton."
"Dead?"
Caroline's mother repeated. She'd sounded a little gleeful, too.
"Yes, a riding accident, I heard. The younger son has taken the title, and his father is rumored to be in poor health. You know what that means, don't you?"
Mama walked a circle around Caroline and the seamstress. Apparently content with what she saw, she returned her attention to Mrs. Longhorn.
"He'll be a duke," she replied.
"Yes," her friend cried, "and Caroline will be a duchess."
Where was a slice of chocolate cake when a girl needed one? At 10 minutes until 8 that evening, most of the family sat in the Oriental drawing room awaiting the call to dinner. All they lacked was Caroline's brother Edward, who, at almost 27, lived down Fifth Avenue in the lesser mansion the family had left behind when this one had been completed.
"Anytime Edward isn't where he's promised to be, he's off with that Jack Culhane," Mama complained to Caroline's father.
Caroline hid the smile that seemed to work its way across her face whenever she thought of her brother's best friend. She could guarantee that wherever they were, Eddie and Jack were having more fun than she was. For as long as she could remember, she tried to tag after them with little success. When she'd walk in on their tale-telling, she'd catch just enough to make her more determined to be part of their adventures. They were all grown now, with Eddie working at Papa's side, and Jack buying up businesses almost as quickly as his father did. But Caroline's greatest adventure had been frightening off a handful of dukes last year, and that was before Mama had taken away most of her freedom. She hated to sound ungrateful, because she knew how lucky she was. All the same, she'd trade a steamer trunk packed with Maxwell money for just a few days of living like Jack and Eddie.
"Edward said he'll be here at 8, and he will be," Papa replied. "He's a Maxwell man, which means he's a man of his word."
He turned his attention to Caroline, who had been doing her best to blend into the bold orange and green chrysanthemum pattern brocade of her chair. Not an easy job when one was wearing a peacock blue dress.
"A Maxwell woman, too. Am I right, pumpkin?" he asked.
Pride shone from his craggy features and from under his thick gray mustache, so startling in contrast to his fading auburn hair, and moved upward with his smile. Caroline hesitated. His question was simple enough on the surface, but since just minutes ago her parents had been discussing Lord Bremerton's visit, she knew what Papa really meant. She searched for a comment positive enough to make her father happy, yet still not an outright promise to lure and marry some Englishman she'd never met. Not when she had someone, oh, so much better in mind.
"Really, Bernard, you must stop calling her that," Mama said, saving Caroline another diplomatic dance. "It was bad enough that it slipped out at the Astor's ball last year. Imagine if you said it in front of Bremerton."
"There's no mistaking her for a gourd, Agnes," Papa said. "And you'll always be my pumpkin, won't you, Caroline?"
"Of course I will, even from across the sea."
Deep male talk and laughter sounded from outside the room. Jack was here with Eddie. This time Caroline couldn't stop her smile from appearing. They walked in together with Jack standing inches taller than Eddie, who was of average height. And where Eddie was on the wiry side, Jack looked as though he could take on Calcutta street thieves and win. Jack's black frock coat sat well across his broad shoulders, and the white of his starched shirt and collar set off the sun-darkened color of his skin and deep brown hair. She liked that he was clean-shaven, too. Eddie's attempt at a mustache seemed a little scant, though she'd never say so to her brother.
6 minutes to spare, Eddie said before kissing Mama on the cheek. You were counting, weren't you?
I was doing no such thing, she said, but bright flags of pink on her face let Eddie know he had caught her.
Mama's gaze drifted past Eddie and on to Jack. While she didn't permit her disapproval to show in her expression, she still managed to convey it by stiffening her posture. Even Pomeroy, the little mop of a lapdog Mama had acquired so she could feel a bit like Queen Victoria, seemed to tighten up.
"Good evening, Mrs. Maxwell," Jack said, giving a slight bow.
"We were late getting back from Jack's new business concern. I hope you don't mind if he joins us for dinner," Eddie added.
"No, really, I need to be on my way," Jack said. "I just wanted to say hello to the family."
His smile briefly settled on Amelia and Helen, who wore matching yellow satin dresses in appropriately girlish styles. And because Mama believed in playing the asset of their twinhood to the fullest, their wavy auburn hair had been upswept in identical fashions, too. They smiled prettily and inclined their heads to Jack, but never met his eyes. His attention moved on to Caroline, who had no qualms about meeting Jack Culhane head-on.
"Hello, Caroline. Are the social rounds treating you well?" he asked, a devilish light shining in his blue eyes.
How her girlfriends could not find him handsome was beyond Caroline. They used phrases like "too earthy" when they spoke of him. She thought the man they found attractive looked half-starved. Jack was perfect. Her heart beat faster at the sight of the two dimples that always appeared when he teased her. He knew how she felt about the endless gatherings that Mama insisted she attend,
and Jack felt the same way, too. He might slip into a party, but he was always quickly gone.
"Very well," she said. "I've been having a wonderful time."
"Really wonderful?"
"Bordering on delirious."
His smile became a full-out grin.
"I'll bet." "Stay for dinner," Ed said to Jack. "Tell my father about the new brewery and your plans for expansion."
Caroline waited for his answer. She'd make a devil's bargain of her own and trade away tonight's final slice of cake if he would stay.
"Another brewery?"
her father asked Jack in a tone that was disapproving and yet curious, too.
"Yes, sir," Jack replied. "Don't you already have one in Pennsylvania? And one in Boston as well?"
Papa frowned.
"Then why buy any more?" "For the same reasons your grandfather bought those regional railroads, sir. Consolidation of power and resources."
Papa flicked his hand as though shooing away a gnat.
"Breweries aren't the same thing at all."
Caroline settled into eavesdrop. She felt sheer joy at hearing a conversation of more import than whether it was appropriate to have the lettering on one's calling card embossed.
"With all due respect, sir, you're wrong," Jack said.
Papa rose from the ornate carved chair Mama claimed was Imperial Chinese. He joined Jack and Eddie in front of the cavernous fireplace, stepping on one of the two tiger skins on the floor while on his way. Caroline tried to avoid looking at the tigers. She'd been 13 when Papa had brought them home from a hunting trip, and she'd cried well into the night upon seeing them. Caroline focused on the gentlemen. They looked so civilized in their black evening suits, though Papa's was cut to accommodate his girth. He ate with the same robust passion he gave the rest of life.
"I'm wrong, am I?"
he asked Jack, clearly warming to the debate. Caroline's mother must have known that her window of opportunity for a dinner without Jack Culhane had closed.
"O'Brien, see that there's room at the table for Mr. Culhane," she said.
The butler, who was an expert at appearing and disappearing with ghostly skill, left only to appear an impossibly short time later and announce that dinner was served. They entered the dining room, which had been known to seat 300 when Mama was having one of her larger parties. Their footsteps echoed all the way to the ceiling, with its frescoes of fat little cherubs, platters of fruit, and women who'd always looked to Caroline to be in some form of distress. Jack was ushered to a spot just to Caroline's right. She glanced at her mother to see if a mistake had been made. Jack should have been seated far closer to Papa so that they could continue to converse. Apparently not, since her mother wore a content smile, probably at the thought of having quashed business talk. O'Brien looked pleased with himself, too. Caroline would never understand how the butler managed to read Mama's mind, but he was a master at it. The family settled in, and wine was poured. Mama and the twins talked of the tea they'd attended in the afternoon, while most everyone else attempted to appear interested. Caroline, however, was too occupied by trying not to be so conscious of Jack. Warmth seemed to roll from him. She caught a hint of wood smoke that must have traveled with him from his afternoon's adventures. She glanced his way and found that he'd been looking at her, so she pretended great interest in the silver of her place setting. The first course was served, a little quail that had been stuffed with something or another. After a tiny bite, Caroline set her fork on the plate's edge. Good thing, too, because she was under extra scrutiny after this morning's fitting.
"We must improve Rosemead's grounds and refurnish it immediately. It's entirely lacking in elegance. If we didn't need to be in residence no later than July 1st, I'd say to raise the whole thing and start over. But with both Bremerton and the season upon us, I shouldn't get carried away,"
Mama said to Papa after being sure Caroline had left her quail to languish.
"Do whatever you wish," Caroline's father replied.
That was his stock answer for anything regarding the family's residences, which he left wholly to his wife. Caroline wasn't feeling quite so calm. Their Newport summer cottage was her favorite. While it was hardly small at 40 rooms, its Tudor-style stone and timber exterior gave it a sense of simplicity that this house lacked. Rosemead also held memories of the many summer days when she chased after Eddie and Jack. Her heart would break if those were wiped away.
"Why would Rosemead need improvement? It's perfect just as it is," she said.
"Perfect? Perfect to entertain a duke?" Mama asked.
Caroline could feel her hard-fought control evaporating.
"What duke?" she asked. "Bremerton's not a duke unless both his father and grandfather conveniently die."
Her mother couldn't have looked more shocked if frogs had sprung from Caroline's mouth.
"Caroline, really?"
"It's true, Mama. That's the one fact you have. What you don't know is what sort of man he is. If he's kind or smart or has a good smile," she said, thinking of Jack's smile.
"And, Caroline, be quiet," her mother commanded.
But Caroline's words might as well have been those frogs, because she couldn't stop them.
"And for once, could we have something that isn't made to look like something other than what it is?"
She waved her hand at the room's rosewood moldings that her mother had ordered covered in gold leaf.
"Could we have wood and not make it look like gold?"
She pointed a finger at the marble fireplace that had been detailed to look like burled oak.
"And stone that isn't painted like wood."
She settled one hand against the half-high bodice of her silken chiffon dinner dress, which, as far as she was concerned, was too fussy to be tolerated.
"And me. What about me, Mama? Couldn't we just agree that my hair is as straight as a pin and stop torturing it into curls? Couldn't we stop dressing me as though I'm royalty when I'm just me? Plain, unremarkable me."
Caroline's words caught up with her, and her anger passed as quickly as it had come. She'd never been able to hang on to it, which she supposed was a decent trait. A handier one would have been keeping her frustration to herself. Her mother and father were staring at her aghast. Amelia and Helen looked as though they were about to burst into tears, and poor Eddie was gazing raptly into his wine goblet, as though the secrets to life rested there. Caroline didn't dare look at Jack. If she did, her humiliation would be complete. She pushed back her chair and rose.
I think I'm feeling unwell," she said into the silence that hung over the table. "If you'll excuse me, I'll just..."
But because she had no idea what she planned to do, she simply turned and left. Her new shoes skidded on the hard floor, making her steps as wobbly as she felt inside. She passed Annie in the hallway, but didn't stop to ask her what in heaven's name she was doing by the dining room. And instead of heading upstairs as she, too, should have done, Caroline rushed to the conservatory. Once inside, she closed the glass and wrought iron door that kept the room's warmth and humidity neatly trapped. She paused at the finch cage and shook her head.
"I know just how you feel," she said to the birds.
At least the birds couldn't see through the room's foliage to know that their kind flitted freely outside. Caroline had to watch Eddie being given full rein, while she and the twins were groomed to be Mama's idea of perfect wives. But that was not going to change. The best she could do was work well within the cage that surrounded her, too. Caroline touched the tip of one finger to the pinkish edge of a delicate orchid blossom and watched it quiver. At least it was a very pretty cage, if over-furnished.
"I knew I'd find you here," said a male voice.
Chapter 2 Caroline looked away from the flower. Jack stood between the tall potted palms that framed the room's entry.
"It's just where I'd find you at Rosemead, too. Would you mind some company?" he asked.
In his right hand was a plate bearing a thick slice of chocolate cake. Even though her appetite had fled with her outburst in the dining room, Caroline revised her prior assessment. Jack Colhane was not just perfect. He was gloriously so. Caroline couldn't recall the last time she'd been alone with a male who wasn't a family member. Mama had deemed it unacceptable under any circumstance once Caroline had turned 12. But here she was, alone with Jack. She couldn't think of a better man with whom to break a few rules.
"Of course I don't mind company, especially when it arrives with chocolate cake," Caroline said to him. "But why aren't you still in the dining room?"
"Amelia and Helen started sniffling, and I got the sense the dam was about to burst. Since I believe in self-preservation, I did what I had to do."
He extended the cake.
Are you going to take this, or should I give it back to the red-headed maid who came running after me with it?
So Annie was behind the miracle of the cake. She might prove to be a wonderful ally if she wasn't fired first. Caroline eyed the treat. Perhaps her appetite hadn't fled as far as she'd thought.
I'd hate to send you out of your way over mere dessert, she said, reaching for the plate and fork.
She speared a fat chunk of cake and sighed when its rich flavor met her mouth. Jack grinned.
I take it the cake's more to your taste than quail.
That's me, Caroline said after she'd swallowed. Plain old me.
Jack followed her as she walked down the mossy green tile pathway between the benches of plants and onto a small wrought iron table on which sat an open-mouthed blue and white jar holding a white water lily.
Not plain, not old, and in no way unremarkable, he said.
She glanced over her shoulder at him. He appeared to be sincere. Caroline sat, taking care not to snag her dress on the metal chair. She didn't usually believe compliments from gentlemen, because she had millions of reasons in the bank to doubt the giver's sincerity. Jack was rich, though.
Thank you, she said.
You're welcome.
He was looking at her much as Eddie had been at that wine goblet.
You look different tonight.
My temper must have brought some color to my face, she said.
He seemed to shake off the moment as he took the seat opposite her.
That's probably it.
He paused and then added,
So, are you going to offer me some of that cake?
Caroline froze.
From the same plate? And with the same fork?
He laughed.
A lightning bolt won't strike us. I've been in parts of the world where everyone shares from the same pot, no utensils at all, and to the best of my knowledge, God hasn't turned on them yet.
Jack had brought her the cake and missed dinner, too. Caroline glanced toward the conservatory door. If her drama at dinner had stunned her mother, this would give her fits. But no one was watching, not even the ghostly O'Brien. She handed Jack the fork and felt a tingle of rebellious glee.
Tell me about your almost duke, Jack said after he'd had a bite of cake. From the stories I've heard about your visit to London last year, I'd have thought all Englishmen would be cowering on their side of the Atlantic.
Exaggerations, mostly, she said.
Mostly?
He leaned back in his chair and smiled at her.
Care to share?
I share cake, not tales, she said. But as a point of information, the almost duke isn't mine, and I don't want him to be either.
That's not a very welcoming attitude. Almost un-American, Jack commented with a smile.
I'm American enough that I don't see the benefit to the Maxwell name if I snare an English title.
Point taken again, he said. But cheer up. You might even like the almost duke once you meet him.
Caroline couldn't sort out which part of Jack's statement she liked least. That he wanted her to welcome this latest marriage candidate, or that he thought marriage must be orchestrated.
Is that what you hope for with your future wife, that you'll like each other? She finally asked.
He didn't look as though he appreciated having the conversation turn back on him.
I don't have a future wife, and I don't plan on looking for one, he said. But from my bachelor's point of view, liking one's spouse isn't all bad.
Caroline made a scoffing sound. The corner of his mouth quirked in response.
So, what is it you want, then? He asked.
Caroline rubbed her fingertip against the thin, silver gilt edge of the cake's plate. She'd spent a lot of time thinking about what she wanted, and apparently could not have.
I want passion, she said. I want to adore my husband so much that the thought of life without him crushes me. I want love, true, forever burning love.
He blinked.
You want Romeo and Juliet?
The play happened to be one of her favorite Shakespearean works. She reread it each summer by candlelight at Rosemead. If that made her a romantic ninny, so be it.
What's so horrible about Romeo and Juliet? She asked.
Other than that they died stupidly young, he countered before tucking into the cake.
She glared at him.
Do you have a romantic bone in your body?
I've got practical bones, he replied. Tough, Irish practical bones. And what do you know about burning love, anyway?
Caroline knew about unrequited love. She knew how she felt nearly breathless, and not from a tight corset, when Jack entered a room. But she would never tell him that. He thought highly enough of himself already.
"I don't know as much as I planned to," she said aloud.
He laughed.
"Your mother would keel over if she heard you say that."
She took the fork from him.
"Which is why I watch my words in front of her."
"You're smart,"
he said,
"and quick, too, if a little greedy with that cake."
"Ha! You try being starved nightly and let me know how it works for you," she said before taking more.
"Eat more in the afternoon," he suggested.
Caroline smiled, but also wished life were that uncomplicated.
"Is it so bad having your future mapped out?" Jack asked.
"Yes," she replied. "I want to do the mapping."
"We both know that's unlikely. You need to make the best of the situation. You'll be a lot happier if you do."
She had been thinking the same thing earlier, but that didn't mean she liked hearing it from Jack, of all men.
"That's easy for you to say when your future's your own," she pointed out.
"Be practical," Jack urged. "You're lucky. You're a wealthy heiress who happens to be witty and attractive."
He hesitated.
"Some men might even find you beautiful."
"But not you," she thought.
"Yes, I have money," she said, "and I can put words together, and I'm decent looking. But if you were in my shoes, would that and a spouse foisted upon you make you happy, Jack?"
He stared at her as though she were speaking in tongues.
"Well, that's different. I'm a man."
He couldn't have chosen a worse answer. Caroline stood.
"Which gives you a list of rights I don't have, but should," she said. "I can and will take care of myself. And if you maintain this attitude about women, Jack, you're going to wind up eating your cake alone."
She picked up her plate and fork and left. Jack Culhane was not gloriously perfect. He was another big lumbering male who deserved no chocolate at all. Later that night, Jack sat in one of the pair of time-worn gold brocade chairs in front of the drawing room fireplace at the home he shared with his father.
Home. It was a mansion,
though not as serious in its pursuit of the title as the Maxwell family's near palace. Less stuffed to the rafters, too. Having lived in a male household since his mother's death 20 years before, Jack didn't understand the apparent female need for clutter gathering. And after dessert tonight with Caroline Maxwell, he was beginning to believe he didn't understand females either. The scrawny little girl trailing after him had grown up. He supposed he'd known that for a while, but somehow Caroline had become part of the landscape to him. Until tonight. When her face had lit up as she'd started speaking her mind, he'd realized she was beautiful. Her black hair and those thick lashes fringing light brown eyes weren't what a man saw in the usual American miss. Neither was her plump lower lip, which had riveted his attention. And her declaration of wanting to experience burning love wasn't the usual talk from a demure debutante either. Jack stretched out his legs and smiled. He'd enjoyed Caroline's opinions and independence, even when she turned on him. He'd bet that spark was going to be extinguished, though. Bernard and Agnes would marry her off to the highest title, and she'd end up in a damp ruin of a house with a man who would find her more odd than interesting. That was a shame, but it wasn't his business. The pungent scent of the peat his father had shipped from Ireland wafted from the fireplace, drawing Jack from thoughts of Caroline Maxwell's circumstances. Others had struggled in one. She might, too. Da had taken on America and ended up owning timber tracts and coal mines from here to the Mississippi. And he'd raised Jack to understand the benefits of hard work. One trip to Da's birthplace in hardscrabble County Donegal had driven that home. And so Jack worked. Today's purchase had been 6 months in the making. After he picked up one more brewery he had his eye on in Rhode Island, his holdings would be complete. Da was proud, though he wished Jack had chosen whiskey over beer. but Jack had been keeping a close eye on the temperance groups. Hard spirits stood a greater risk of eventually being outlawed. And Jack liked beer, as wrong-headed as whiskey-loving Da might find that. The fat, round-faced clock on the mantel had just chimed 10 when Jack's father entered. Jack knew he was seeing what he'd look like in 30 years. They shared the same stubborn set of the jaw and the same dark Irish skin. And like his father, he'd probably still be dressed in his day clothes well into the night, with shirt sleeves rolled up and wrinkled after a hard day's work. "You again?" Da asked in a teasing voice as he settled into the chair next to Jack's. "Does it not bother you living under my roof? When I was your age, I was long gone from home."
"I've seen the place. You had more incentive to leave."
Da gave a bark of laughter.
"True enough. I should have made things rougher on you."
Jack grinned.
"Are you kicking me to the curb?"
"I could have 10 of you under this roof, and our paths would still not cross more than once a day."
Jack noted the lack of a real answer. Da was crafty with his words.
"You are home early, though," his father said. "Dinner was cut short. Domestic drama at the Maxwells'."
"No surprise there."
Da gave Jack a sideways glance.
"Are you not going to ask me why I'm home before midnight on a card night?"
"I'm not sure I want to know," Jack replied.
His father grinned.
"Sure you do. I won myself a Newport cottage off Harry Benton. The man doesn't know when to quit, and I do."
But Harry had also once won attractive Michigan timber from Da. Jack had no doubt that winning the cottage had felt sweet.
"How large a cottage?" he asked.
"A house on Mill Street, looking over Touro Park. The place is small, I'm hearing. Less than 20 rooms, but more than a Culhane has owned there before."
"Great, but what are you going to do with it?"
"Why, sign it over to you, of course," Da said. "You can fix it up. It will make a grand gift for your bride."
"I don't have a bride."
"At your age, you should."
If today's warm spring air had spurred all the marriage talk, Jack hoped for a cold snap.
"Keep the house, Da. You might marry again."
"No other woman could be what your mam was to me. You, though, it's time you found a wife."
"I like being single."
"I mean in this, Jack. There comes a time when a man needs to move on. This is yours. You've had your fun, and it's time to think of the future. Do you want to be alone?"
"I'm not. I've got you to bother the hell out of me."
Da snorted.
"Only when you're being an arse. I've not given you many orders, and mostly have done what you should. But now I'm telling you to get married, and be sure there's an heir to grow what we both built."
It looked as though Caroline's parents hadn't cornered the market on empire building. Now Jack had an inkling of how she felt. Of course he had money of his own and could walk if he chose, but he respected his father and would hear him out.
"Is there any special sort of heiress you think I should be shopping for?"
he asked, letting out some of his general annoyance.
"Don't be an idiot," Da replied. "The money doesn't matter. Marry for love."
Love. That, at least, should buy him some time. Caroline's Saturday started with an early summons to her mother's sitting room. Mama let Caroline linger on the thick floral Aubusson rug outside her door for a few minutes before she was allowed inside, just long enough for Caroline to begin to worry about the repercussions of last night's speech. She could take a lecture, but not another curtailment of her freedom. She'd had precious little of that since her last London season, when her methods for running off suitors hadn't impressed her mother.
"Good morning, Mama,"
Caroline said after her mother's maid had finally ushered her inside. Caroline kept her gaze trained on her mother. Mama's quarters tended to distract her, and she needed to be focused.
"Good morning," her mother replied from her perch at her ornate little Louis XV writing desk. Pomeroy, who looked quite imperial this morning, sat on a gold-embroidered pillow at her feet.
"We need to consult about your schedule for the week."
"Yes, of course," Caroline said.
Then, because she preferred to take consequences head-on, she added,
"But don't you want to address last night's dinner with me?"
"We're going to pretend it didn't happen," Mama replied as she paged through a sheaf of papers.
Caroline knew her mother was constitutionally incapable of holding back a lecture, and Caroline didn't want to pretend. After nearly a year of keeping her emotions bottled up, she felt ready to explode. It was wrong, though, to vent on Mama. She was only doing what she thought was right. Jack, though, had made an intriguing target, and she'd already forgiven him for thinking like a man. He could hardly help it.
"Are you smiling?" her mother asked. Caroline started a bit.
"I might have been."
She'd been thinking of Jack, after all.
"You were, and I can't see why, after last night."
"You were right to say we should let it go, Mama."
Her mother nodded firmly.
"And so we shall. We're all under some pressure with the summer season about to start, and I can appreciate that your nerves might have gotten the better of you. But today's a new day, and we must begin to plan for Lord Bremerton's arrival."
And that was about the best one could hope for Mama, letting something go.
"I will be occupied with the improvements to Rosemead," her mother said. "I plan to leave for Newport this afternoon. If Mrs. Longhorn cannot accommodate me at Villa Blanca, I might have to stay at Rosemead during the work," she said with a delicate shudder at the thought of such inconvenience.
"I am sure Mrs. Longhorn will help out," Caroline said.
Villa Blanca, which had been built 6 years prior for Esme Longhorn's debut, had more than a dozen guest rooms.
"We shall see," Mama said. "I will expect you and the twins to follow your weekly schedules in my absence. No making a worry of yourself for your papa, and no extra eating."
"Of course, Mama," Caroline said.
Her toes were twitching within her ankle boots at the very thought of getting out of the house and breathing free air. Her mother held a piece of paper at a distance from her eyes.
"It says here,"
she squinted, and Caroline bit down on the impulse to hand Mama her spectacles.
"Ah, yes. It says that you have a luncheon with Harriet Vandermeulen, and later in the afternoon a group of you are scheduled for a bicycle ride in Central Park. Is that correct?"
"Yes, Mama."
That was the official activity, though Caroline had long had another destination planned. Because, of course, the best way of working with Mama was to work around her. Her mother set the paper down.
"Harriet wears knickerbockers when she cycles, does she not?"
"Yes, Mama."
"No matter what they say, knickerbocker outfits are unseemly," Mama said with a rueful shake of her head. "You must pedal away from Harriet."
That, Caroline was guaranteed to do.
Chapter 3. Bicycling with a pack of giggling debutantes wasn't something Jack relished, or even generally subjected himself to. But tomorrow he was heading to Newport to see the new cottage, and later in the week he planned to meet with the owner of the Providence Brewery to negotiate a sale. That left him today to pretend to be wife-seeking. If he didn't go through the motions, Da would never let the idea rest. This morning, Jack had accepted a cycling invitation that Charles Vandermeulen had sent over a week ago. Whether it was a case of better late than never remained to be seen. The Vandermeulen family was anxious to see Charles's sister, Harriet, married off, and Charles seemed to have decided that he'd like Jack as a brother-in-law. Jack, however, found Harriet disinteresting, though well-mannered. In short, she was a total opposite of Caroline. Jack approached the group gathered on the edge of Central Park where it met Fifth Avenue. A dozen future rulers of New York society stood by their bicycles under two broad and leafy sycamore trees, avoiding the bright afternoon sun. He wondered how the wool-clad group would avoid dropping of exhaustion on this unseasonably warm day. He worried about the women especially, in their jackets with both blouses and vests beneath, not to mention their long skirts. Even those who wore shorter skirts with voluminous knickerbockers peeking from beneath would feel the heat. Because Jack chose not to roast, he'd grabbed a yachting blazer made of cotton. Functionality interested him, not fashion.
"There you are, old man,"
Charles cried as Jack coasted to a stop and dismounted. Jack did feel old compared to this crew. Under one tree, he'd already spotted the Maxwell twins, along with a handful of their little friends. They were all barely out of the nursery. Slightly older cyclists had gathered beneath the second tree. and he did mean slightly. At age 23, Charles's sister appeared to be the eldest. Charles approached and shook Jack's hand. Round of build, with wavy brownish hair and a usually serious demeanor, Charles looked as trustworthy as the heir to a banking fortune should. He'd entered Princeton the same year as Jack. Charles, along with classmate Eddie Maxwell, had made sure Jack received invitations to the best dining clubs, though he wasn't from a top-drawer family. Jack had appreciated the gesture, even if he hadn't cared one hell of a lot about making inroads with the worst of the snobs.
"So glad you could make it," Charles said to Jack.
"Happy to be here," Jack replied automatically.
Then he realized that might actually be true. He'd just spotted Caroline in the deep shade of the first tree. If her dark hair hadn't given her away, the seductive curve of her waist to her hips would have. This outing might be tolerable after all. Jack began to head in Caroline's direction, but Charles held him back.
"My sister Harriet is here," he said in a cheerful tone. "Have I ever introduced you to her?"
"Yes, you have," Jack said.
When Charles's brown spaniel eyes drooped, he added,
"But it's been some time."
"Then let's go over and renew the acquaintance," Charles said. "Bring your bicycle. We'll be heading off soon."
It was clear to Jack that he was expected to be Harriet's partner.
"Harriet," Charles called, "look who's joining us at the last minute."
Instead of just Harriet, the entire group looked their way. Jack lifted a hand in a casual wave and shot a smile specifically at Caroline. She smiled back. Maybe last night's storm had blown over. Harriet hurried over to greet him. As she talked, Jack could see why any number of men might be pleased to have someone like her as a wife. Her blonde hair was thick and beautiful, her teeth were straight, and her nose pert. She didn't require much participation in a conversation, either. Jack nodded and made polite responses as she chattered in her high-pitched tones. All the while, Caroline kept looking over, aggravation growing more obvious on her face. Harriet and her brother were talking about Harriet's skill at archery when Caroline stalked over.
"Excuse me for interrupting, Charles, but do you think we could be on our way?"
Charles looked at her blankly. She gave him a stunning smile.
"Oh, yes, yes, of course," he stammered.
"Thank you," she said.
Charles trotted off to do Caroline's bidding.
"Good job," Jack said to her.
"I try to do my best," she replied.
"Caroline, Jack and I were just talking about archery,"
Harriet announced, moving a step closer to him. Caroline must have noted the proprietary move because amusement began to sparkle in her eyes.
"Were you?"
"Yes."
Harriet tilted her head and assessed Caroline.
"You know, I've never seen you engage in archery while at Newport. Why is that?"
Jack supposed Harriet was trying to showcase her superior assets. Caroline grinned.
"I guess I've never found the right target. Now, if you'll excuse me, I think it's time to ride."
Bullseye, Jack thought. He glanced at Harriet. Even her little rosebud mouth had wilted. And because she deserved some consolation after venturing so far out of her league, Jack held out his elbow to her.
"Shall we go?"
With Charles and Caroline at the front, the group pedaled the park's trails for more than an hour, finally ending up by the lake, where a picnic site, complete with canvas spread on the ground to protect the ladies' skirts, awaited. Jack managed to slip away from Harriet while she was being served lemonade. He took advantage of the time by catching up with various acquaintances. All the while, though, he kept an eye on Caroline. Before the food had even been set out, she'd moved on to linger on the path next to her bicycle. She kept glancing around as though looking for something, or someone. Harriet caught up with him. Jack listened with half an ear to her description of the pearls her older sister had received when she'd married a French count. He didn't think Harriet would take well to the news that he had no pearls and didn't plan to offer marriage. Caroline had beckoned her sisters over. Jack tried to catch what she was saying to them, but Harriet was coming through too clearly. Caroline mounted her bike and took off. Curiosity got the better of Jack.
"If you'll excuse me for a moment," he said to Harriet.
Jack joined Amelia and Helen, who stood on the path's edge, watching Caroline pedal away.
"Where's your sister off to?" he asked the girls.
"She's not feeling well and is going home,"
Helen, or was it Amelia, said.
"It is a little warm today,"
the other twin chimed in.
"You might consider removing your jackets," he suggested, since their faces had reached a crimson hue.
"We couldn't," said one girl.
The other piped in with,
"Mama would be appalled."
But Mama was home, where Caroline soon would be. Except, Jack suddenly realized, she'd headed off in the wrong direction.
"Pardon me," he said to the girls before turning heel and heading to his bicycle.
It didn't take long to find Caroline. She had exited the park at West 77th Street. He watched as she walked her bicycle across Central Park West and started toward the Natural History Museum. Was she having an assignation there with a secret bow? The idea left a bad taste in Jack's mouth. Caroline was sheltered and sweet, mostly. Who knew what sort of opportunist might be taking advantage of her? Telling himself he was doing this for all the right reasons, Jack crossed the road, dodging carriages, wagons, and a few curses thrown his way. If any man was going to spend the afternoon with Caroline Maxwell, Jack was damn determined it would be he. Another rivulet of perspiration worked its way between Caroline's breasts. As soon as she returned home, she would have money sent to the leaders of the rational dress movement to aid them in their cause. Why should a woman have to perish of heat or tangle in a bicycle chain when engaging in what was supposed to be healthful exercise? The museum's meager bicycle rack was full. Caroline walked her bike to a cluster of shrubbery to the left of the front entrance and leaned it against a fat and tall yew. She still had to deal with the leather straps that were supposed to keep the skirts of her murderous bicycling costume closer to her ankles. She stepped between the bush and the building and bent down to free herself.
"The picnic is back in the park," announced a male voice right beside her.
Caroline yelped and worked hard not to tip over. She'd never give Jack the satisfaction.
"Yes, but there's a free lecture in the library right now," she said as she got the last of her straps undone.
She stood and smoothed her skirt.
He eyed her suspiciously. "A lecture?"
"Yes, on last year's Columbian Exposition. What did you think I was here for?"
He began to reply, but Caroline knew she'd find his explanation less compelling than the lecture.
"Never mind," she said. "I'm already late."
She was almost up the museum steps before she noticed that Jack was behind her.
"You'd better hurry back to the picnic. Harriet will be waiting," she half-teased as he pulled even.
"She can keep," Jack replied. "I want to hear this lecture you find so important."
She smiled.
"You don't think there's really a lecture, do you?"
His skeptical expression remained firmly in place.
"I'll keep you company if you don't mind."
"Suit yourself."
By the time they reached the library, the lecture had begun. All seats were taken. Caroline stood behind the last row and allowed herself only one smug smile at Jack for not having believed her. The assistant curator giving the talk was so far away and the lighting so poor that Caroline knew she'd scarcely be able to see the photos. All the same, she'd stay. There was no telling when she'd be able to orchestrate a museum day again. Jack stood by her side, arms crossed over his chest. About 5 minutes into the lecture, he leaned close and said in a low voice,
"Let me see if I understand this. You're attending a lecture about an exhibition that's over and done with, which itself was just displays about how people in other lands live."
"Yes."
"That's life third hand."
Didn't he think she knew that?
"I'm lucky to be here at all," she quietly said. "Mama thinks if I'm seen in a museum, I'll be labeled a blue stocking. And certainly my parents didn't let me go to Chicago last year."
A silver-haired woman with spectacles who was seated in front of Caroline turned around and shushed her. She whispered sorry and then glared at Jack.
"If you don't like it here, leave," she whispered.
Instead, a large hand curled around her wrist. She tried to tug free, but he mouthed, "Trust me." Jack led her out the door and down the hallway.
"Where are we going?" she asked.
"To life once removed."
He looked down at her and smiled.
That's an improvement, don't you think?
Yes, she agreed. He released her wrist and ushered her down the main set of stairs. The heels of her boots tapped a quick rhythm on the marble as she worked to keep up with his longer stride. They stopped outside a crowded exhibition hall that bore a sign reading, Alaska.
I wish I could have had you here a few weeks ago, Jack said as they took their place at the end of the line.
She glanced up at him.
The exhibition opened only last week.
This, too, had been one of the spots she'd hoped to visit today.
How did you get in?
I met Lieutenant Emmons, he replied.
Some girls fancied stage actors or opera singers. Caroline dreamed of explorers. Emmons was both an officer in the Navy and a renowned photographer and collector of Alaskan artifacts.
You've met him? Where?
She asked, and yes, she had sounded a little breathless.
In Alaska, Jack replied casually. 3 summers ago.
Really?
He smiled.
Yes, really.
And the wildest place I've seen is Central Park, she said, feeling a little glum. What's it like in Alaska?
Savage, he said. Beautiful. Wild. I've seen the blue ice of glaciers drop into the sea, and whales breach, and flocks of puffins work to get their fat bodies from the sea and into the air.
Stop, Caroline said. You're making me jealous.
Then go there. See the world. You'd eat it up, Caroline.
I can't. The only thing I'm allowed to see are flocks of nobles in need of a fortune.
He was silent for a moment.
Maybe later, then. After you've married your noble, you can travel.
Caroline did her best to work up a smile in response. Jack's words had been a valiant effort to give her hope, but they both knew he'd failed. They approached a case holding photographs of Native Americans in their exotic ceremonial garb.
Tlingit tribe, Jack said,
and then told her of his experiences with them. Life secondhand was better than nothing, Caroline supposed, and Jack did have a way of talking.